John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
But we do
And a very good day to you. The Roman Orchestra leaves the stage. Well done, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. We begin the making of the John Batchelor Show. Welcome to Carrot Soup. We turn our attention immediately to the wars in the Middle East, especially in the Gulf. I welcome my colleague and friend of many years, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. And we're very pleased to bring on Captain James Fennell, United States Navy retired intelligence officer. He is co-author of the new book, Embracing Communist China, America's Greatest Strategic Failure. Yes, yes, that's an ironic title. Government fellow at the Geneva Center for Security. He is in Europe. He has 5-6 hours ahead for the news and can help us through the day of cross-reporting. What you see is not necessarily what you get in the Middle East. This is a war, and the fog of war is always the reminder. I state again what I've learned over 25 years. The first three reports are wrong. Not purposefully, wrong. That's all. The next three reports, this is an update, are information warfare. Consume them, but be aware that there's a motive for this. Gentlemen, a very good day to you. Gordon, I begin with you because China, increasingly in the news, the headline in the Financial Times this morning seems especially rich given the anticipation of the President of the United States to travel to Beijing to sit at a table with Xi Jinping and talk about trade. The headline reads starkly, this is major news in London, globally, everybody's looking at it at the same time. Iran used Chinese spy satellite to target U.S. bases. Subhead, leaked documents show IRGC, that's the Iranian state within a state, secretly acquired system and used it to guide strikes during war in March. You will all recall that there were casualties at the strike in a Saudi Arabian base, destruction of aircraft and casualties. That is one of the targets the Financial Times investigation identifies. Gordon, a very good day to you. This is striking news. I can expect there would be a reaction from Beijing, but not yet. At the same time, we know that Sergei Lavrov arrived in Beijing yesterday for meetings with his opposite foreign minister, Wang Yi. Good day to you, Gordon.
Good day, John.
Your comment on this headline.
Well, yes, it's... it's bad that we lost an E-3, an AWACS plane in Saudi Arabia. But the more important thing is the strike on the base in Kuwait on March 1. We lost 6 service members on that strike, which means that China has been participating in the killing of American servicemen and women. And the other thing, of course, is that the President of the United States wants to go to Beijing, which is an enemy combatant. This report and others show that. President should not go there, especially during the course of a war.
We will begin immediately. Jim, I'm going to give you the first opportunity to comment on this. You are Navy, and Navy is listening to these reports out of Europe routinely now because they're charged with maintaining a blockade on the Straits of Hormuz, especially dealing with ships associated with the People's Republic of China, and we can guess the Russian Federation shadow fleet. So we will begin, gentlemen. This is the making of the John Batra Show, and this is 8 to 9 minutes for tonight to lead the show, Jim. Thank you. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, joins me as my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to bring Captain James Fennell to the front of the line to talk about a new report out of Europe. Jim is the author, co-author of Embracing Communist China, America's Greatest Strategic Failure. He's also a government fellow at the Geneva Center for Security Policy. He's in Europe. Captain, a very good day to you. The headline that I asked for comment upon, it is stark. Financial Times, in these last hours, Iran used Chinese spy satellite to target U.S. bases. Subhead, leaked documents show IRGC, the state within a state in Iran, secretly acquired system and used it to guide strikes during war in March. I know you're not surprised, Captain. I cannot surprise the U.S. Navy. But this seems especially crude for China, knowing that they would be caught. Or did they want to be caught? Good day to you, Jim.
Well, good day, John and Gordon. I think it's interesting, the timing of this report. I don't doubt that there's some truth to it. I'm not sure there's a direct linkage on, do we know how well the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps' command and control and ability to, it said in the article they were tasking the satellite, this commercial satellite, the T-01 Bravo, which is from a Chinese satellite company that has apparently half a meter resolution, which is much better than the 5 meter resolution that the Iranian designed satellites had. But presuming that there was some kind of information passed, and I agree with Gordon 100% that this is an affront by the Chinese that the president should, weigh very heavily. I know that he wants to have a deal. I know the Chinese want to make a deal so that they can sell their goods in America. But we cannot abide with China providing targeting data to a rogue regime in Iran that's killed Americans. That's just unacceptable. And we also have to ask the same question about Russia. We had a double tap of drones last month during the war against our embassy in Riyadh. One drone flew in, exploded, and then several seconds later, a second drone flew in, which is classic Russian tactics, techniques, and procedures that they've been doing in the war in Ukraine. So we have both Russia and China that are probably involved with providing Iran targeting information and tactics, techniques, and procedures how to kill Americans. So that's unacceptable, and I would hope that the president would call it out. But he's the commander-in-chief, and he has a much grander view of what's going on. But from my deck plate, I would say you need to say something to him about it.
Gordon, I have a question for the captain.
Captain, should the United States take out that satellite?
Well, that's a very touchy question because we have been longstanding saying that we don't want to weaponize space and that we're not in the business of weaponizing space. And then there's ramifications if we do that. What would China and Russia do to our satellites? So I think there's ways that we can look to neutralize it, maybe not destroy it, but there should be ways that our cyber command and Space Command should be able to block whatever data is coming out of that or manipulate the data or make the data divert and go to wrong places or even be, spoofed. So we have other ways to manipulate with that. I'd like to know more about this. And I still question the Iranians' C2 command and control and their ability to target, because so far we haven't seen any really successful, other than these couple of few incidents, where they've been successful in hurting Americans. And they certainly haven't been able to touch any U.S. Navy warship in this 40-plus days of this conflict.
The blockade announced by the president and the U.S. Navy is charged with blockading the Strait of Hormuz. So far, we do not have a major report of a trouble with the Iranians on the shoreline. However, We do have mixed reports about ships coming in and out of the Strait of Hormuz. Is this a straightforward mission for the Navy? Do you see problems developing and maintaining the blockade, Jim?
No, this is a traditional naval mission. It's something that we practice to. We've actually done in the Gulf previously, back in the 80s and in the 90s and other times. In the Iraq War, I remember being in the Gulf in the mid-90s on a carrier, and we had ships in quarantine, Iraqi vessels coming out of the Shatt al-Arab, and they were put into what we called a Fenway and different names of quarantine areas up in the northern Persian Gulf. So we can do this. CENTCOM's reporting we have 12-plus warships. We have an aircraft carrier, the Abraham Lincoln. The second carrier is coming, the George Bush. We have amphibious assault ships. We have amphibious dock ships. We have amphibious landing ships. We have destroyers, guided missile destroyers. We have littoral combat ships with mine countermeasure packages on board. And then we have all sorts of aircraft, fighter aircraft, sea and land-based, unmanned aerial vehicles, unmanned robotic vehicles in the water that can do surveillance. We have explosive ordnance division personnel and their capabilities. So this is something that we train to, plan for, and according to Admiral Cooper, the commander of Central Command, just a few hours ago, stated that in the first 36 hours, a complete blockade has been put into effect. And as you said at the opening of this show, you know, we're still in that kind of fog of war about what's actually happening. But right now, it seems that there's evidence to show that ships coming out of Iran are being turned back and not allowed to exit the Strait of Hormuz. Additionally, there are other sanctioned vessels, dark fleet vessels, that have been turned around as well. While that's not talked about too much, we are, in fact, have the authority to stop those international violators of the law, and we're checking those, and those have already turned back. Yesterday, the oil tanker Rich Starry had been reported to have exited the Strait of Hormuz, but it actually was turned around and went back. So we will be mostly focusing on Iran's coastline and those ports and then any other violators, sanction violators. But then the rest of the nations of Iraq, Kuwait, UAE, Bahrain, all those ships from those nations, they'll be able to go in and out. So the risk right now and all the threat has been, you know, they'll be able to fire anti-ship cruise missiles. They'll be able to send fast attack boats, or they'll be able to lay mines. And so far, we have not seen any of that in this whole contest in terms of mines. No mines have been detected to date. There's been some talk about it. But when we sent 3 days ago the Michael Murphy, the destroyer, and the Frankie Peterson, another destroyer, through the strait, those are typically not the lead platforms that you would send through a strait that you thought was heavily mined. So I think there's been a lot of bluster and bluff from Iran on their capabilities. And I think right now, because we're successfully turning back ships and we haven't seen Iran do much else, I think that Iran is on the back foot and the pressure's mounting on them. They've got to get this oil out to keep their oil system flowing. And if that stops, that system starts to collapse, and that costs a big money and time to repair if it goes out of service.
Captain James Fennell, United States Navy retired, intelligence officer, co-author of Embracing Communist China, America's Greatest Strategic Failure, Anticipating Where We Are Right Now. Government fellow at the Geneva Center for Security Policy, Gordon Chang. At Gordon G. Chang, I'm John Batchelor. Boy, you know how to debrief, Captain. Well done. Thank you.
I've been practicing this week on different places. It's still, you got to be careful with the news. I mean, I thought that the Bush was going into through Gibraltar 2 days ago, and 4 hours after I said that on air, it was reported she was heading down the west coast of Africa. So,
yeah, it doesn't want to go through the Red Sea, which is
correct. And today I should have read it. The Iranians' highest operational commander just came out in the last 2 hours and said that if the Americans continue this blockade, we're going to attack ships in the Gulf, in the Persian Gulf, in the Gulf of Oman, and the Red Sea. So people should be talking about, why is it that Iran says that they have control over the Red Sea?
That is the story from yesterday that resulted in the headline that Saudis were putting pressure on the administration not to blockade Hormuz because they believe they'll lose access to the Red Sea. And,
or they're going to have to pay the Houthis off more.
Yep. And the question is, what are the Houthis? They're strategic reserve, but what have they got? And I don't have the answers. I'm just saying that was yesterday's concern.
Right.
After some time of hearing that the Saudis wanted the White House to press the attack on Iran, now we hear that they want them not to block the Strait of Hormuz because of their dependence on Bab el-Mandeb to get their oil out. It's a mixed message. I'm not organizing it, Jim. I'm just, you know, day by day, it's a different dot on the map.
Right. I agree. The other point, a thing that's strange to me that, and I know it's frustrating, obviously, the president, but in the tanker wars in the 80s, the Lloyd's of London was, you know, willing to accept some level of risk. There were mines, there were missiles from Iraq and Iran, but they still basically insured ships going out, and we did praying mantis. This time it seems politically driven that they will accept zero risk. They will accept zero risk to do anything. And maybe that's just because I was in the Navy, but it seems to me we don't have a lot of proof that the Iranians are capable of inflicting harm. That could change, I guess.
I welcome General Blaine Holt, United States Air Force, retired. Jim, I don't know if you and Jim Fennell have met. Blaine, I don't know if you've met Jim Fennell before. I happily introduce you to Captain James Fennell, United States Navy, retired, who helped us with the Strait of Hormuz comment. Jim, this is Blaine Holt, U.S. Air Force, retired, who helps us with the flyboys, who are very busy these days, very, very busy. Good morning to you, Blaine.
Good morning. It's good to meet you, Jim.
Good morning, and glad to meet you, sir. I'm an 8085, by the way. I was a trained Air Force targeteer, so I've got time down at Maxwell.
Very good. Oh, everybody's got to do time at Maxwell, I suppose.
What is Maxwell, gentlemen?
That is the land of misfit toys, also known as Air University, where an upstart named Claire Chennault was drummed out of our Air Force for thinking about fighters instead of bombers.
Where is it?
Oh, Montgomery, Alabama. Gordon goes there to speak to our Air Force quite frequently.
I thought it was the cooking.
Yeah.
Not quite. Jim, thank you very much. We'll be back to you. The blockade has some days to go, I believe.
I think so. All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Captain, we'll begin. General, we'll begin immediately with a headline that I sent on to you. I hope you've had a chance to review the FT report.
Good to go.
That seems especially. Gordon has the detail that one of the listed targets was the Saudi base, and another listed target was the Kuwait City base. Gordon, was it?
Well, in Kuwait, I don't know exactly where.
It's just outside of Kuwait City.
All right. We're not surprised, but then again, I will ask you, Blaine, did the Chinese want to be caught?
Yep.
It just so happens, coincidentally, Lavrov arrived in Beijing yesterday for meetings with Wang Yi, official visit of the Russian foreign minister to some aspect of state security in the Forbidden City. Here we go. This is 8 to 9 minutes for tonight. Thank you, Blaine. All set, Gordon? You hear everything?
I hear everything.
Good. One. This is the making of the John Batchelor Show. You bet it is. I'm about to start. 3, 2, 1. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang, my colleague and friend at Gordon G. Chang. And we welcome our colleague, General Blaine Holt, United States Air Force, retired, to help us with a story that is on the stark pages of the Financial Times. That's the pink sheet out of London. I trust it enormously because it is Europe's opinion right now, its editorial decisions right now in English. Iran used Chinese spy satellite to target U.S. bases. Subhead, leaked documents show IRGC secretly acquired system and used it to guide strikes during war in March. General, a very good day to you. I asked the difficult-to-answer question, but it occurs to me that everything down is up in a war. Did China want to be caught doing this, transferring technology into the hands of a combatant against the United States, and as far as I can tell, the rest of its neighborhood? Good day to you.
Yeah, good evening. It's a fascinating question because I can see why the Chinese would want to get caught. And the reason, in my own view, is they are trying very hard not to upset the apple cart with Iran because they desperately need that oil and they need the straits opened. And that's for very, very good reasons in their own country with instability right around the corner. And so by getting caught, could you then make a plausible argument that, oh, we're caught, there'll be no more of that. You understand we have a difficult situation with America. And then there's really no appetite on our part to start getting more aggressive with the Chinese or opening up a new front in this fifth generation war, if you will, by making that the new focus, shifting the focus out of Tehran and into Beijing. There's plenty of time for President Trump to work on Chinese issues. And, you know, that visit that he's making to Beijing is just around the corner. So the sacrifice being the AWACS aircraft that got hit in Saudi and then some bombs falling in Kuwait would be the upshot. But I think that that's kind of going to be the end of it.
Gordon, you have a question for the general.
Blaine, it seems to me whether China, whether China wanted to get caught or not, it knew it would get caught eventually. But it probably felt that given the balance of its leverage with the United States, it could get away with it. Where do you think this goes with President Trump now that it's clear in the FT that the Chinese were giving satellite data for that Kuwait strike on March 1 that killed six American service members?
Right. So we have to evaluate, I guess, the way that the visit between Xi Jinping and President Trump goes and the pre-work up to that visit, which is the actual trade deal, is going to tell us enormous amounts. It's either going to be behind the scenes, there was a lot of coordination with Beijing over this, and we're going to see what tantamounts to a tense-filled relationship over trade issues and other territorial issues, basically the status quo, or President Trump is going to up the rhetoric. He'll cancel the trip at the last time, at the last minute. He'll he'll make good on what he threatened, essentially, in social media, which was if you're aiding and abetting Iran, you're going to be getting 50% blanket tariffs slapped back on you. And I think that's probably the tack that President Trump is going to either take that on one end or something muted on the other end. If it's muted, it's going to be what I think it is, which is there is an enormous amount of coordination between Beijing and D.C. and also Moscow and D.C. Because I would have expected just on the first night of this war that China's Navy would have put to sea over protecting their interests in the Straits, and they did nothing of the sort. So it's all we can see publicly indicates to me that there's an enormous amount that is behind the scenes.
Blaine, in public documents, does Space Force have the mission to intervene in a satellite that is understood as hostile?
Well, it has the mission. It's a national decision to do something like that because it going there actually takes space warfare, something we've all tried to avoid in the 80s and the 90s, to a new place. And it's another game of mutually assured destruction. What Space Force can do to countries, other countries can do to us.
Gordon, you have a question.
So, Blaine, could we shoot down that satellite? Or in the alternative, could we do something else to those signals coming down from that sat?
Yeah, the old days, when we say old days, we're talking about a couple of years ago, it would have been, in the old days, shooting down a satellite would have been lots of space junk, a kinetic hit on it, taking it out of orbit that way. Now, It would be a much more about what you're talking about, which is electronic warfare, cyber strike, something along those lines, which either make it a dead satellite, meaning the lights just go out, or it changes what the satellite is able to do, or it gives it a little navigational nudge so it burns itself up on reentry.
The war is not concluded. I understand that. We're in a ceasefire, but it's a fragile ceasefire. I quote the diplomats. Your observation right now about lessons learned by the Air Force in the first 40 days of warfighting, are they pleased with their conduct and their success, or are there areas to improve?
Yeah, I think everybody's extremely pleased. The Air Force is likely to stick with its air campaign doctrine of what we call Warden's Rings, where you take the outer parts of networks in a country and then you know, like logistics and command and control, and you squeeze your way into the center where the leadership rings are. We'll probably stick with that. But I think on the lessons learned side, we're going to be studying this for a very long time to look for how could we have reached the same effect more efficiently, less aircraft, less personnel at risk. How could we get at the exact same effects with other means that we now have technologically? I think that'll be the next big push that you'll see at places like Air University and other bastions of Air Force research like the Academy.
A quick follow-up question. What did the Chinese learn about us?
Well, the Chinese learned that maybe we're not being given enough respect. That the ever since Venezuela to now, I think the Chinese have learned that is a far more capable military than we had sized up through the Biden years. In fact, they probably thought we were in a spiral of decay. That is absolutely not the case. And technologically, they're probably very surprised about things they thought they knew we had.
In other words, the hobbits can fly. Look at that. Okay, Gordon, we have we have a minute left for a quick question.
What have we learned about the shoot down of the F-15E on April 3?
Yeah, that's... It's very interesting case because, first off, we want to know how they were able to do it. Was it just a lucky shot on a shoulder fired? Did they have some sort of weapon from a China or a Russia that we didn't know that they had? You know, the
30
F-15
seconds
is not,
plane, 30 seconds.
Not, yes, sir. Not very stealthy. But we're going to be peeling back that onion for a very, very long time as to luck or something new we haven't seen.
General Blaine Holt, United States Air Force, retired. He was last serving as Deputy Military Representative to NATO, not in the fight yet, but soon enough. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor. Yes, 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 yes. The pause that refreshes everything. I hear a big reset going on out there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's now a ceasefire in all. It's only a name only. It's a ceasefire. We tagged a bunch of stuff last night, and the new target is definitely the IRGC. That's going to be the crescendo for Iran. I think that part of the war is over. I think Iran's done now.
The IRGC.
Yeah, the IRGC is the last bastion. They're the only thing in charge. The mullahs are done. The IRGC has fairly much taken over their role.
Yeah, state within a state. I agree. The decision making is dominated by men who are veterans of the IRGC, whether they call themselves ministers of the interior or not. But they're hard guys, Blaine. They're not going to compromise.
Oh, no, they're not. There's no reason to believe that they will. But our strategy is a Penelope's tapestry, which is, oh, you want to negotiate? Sure, let's set that up. Let's get it on the calendar. Every day that goes by, they're losing people. And the 90 million Iranians are starting to peek behind the curtain that Oz is controlling everything on.
Yeah, I pulled up some photos from 1979, black and white, that are on a site that I use out of copyright.
Oh, nice.
And there were trucks everywhere in downtown Tehran and volunteers with rifles in their hands riding around shooting the regime, right. The then Shah regime. And there's a couple of photographs of executions at the airport. Iranian air personnel blindfolded and shot. So it's not like they're not a bunch of gunslingers. These would be the fathers of the young men today.
That's right. That's exactly right. And those fathers were all trained by Western intelligence services, including ours.
So there is this idea that Iran's timid about taking the streets. They been there, done that, so we don't know what the trigger will be. Can't tell. They certainly started shooting when they were fighting the Shah. Thank you, Blaine.
A little airdrop goes a long way.
Yes.
Take care, gentlemen.
Thank you. Gordon, we're welcoming our colleague Steve Yates.
That's right.
Just back from overseas. And
Korea.
Magically, Steve joins us on stage. Steve, a very good day to you. Thank you for joining.
Hello, John. Hello, Gordon. Great to be with you.
We've checked the box on the blockade, doing very well. Thank you very much. And we've checked the box on the Chinese satellite lent to the Iranian targeteers for the strikes of March against U.S. bases in the region. And we've checked the Air Force, doing very well. Thank you very much. Now targeting the IRGC, the last readout. You're back from a critical part of the world where there's another contest, so we'll begin immediately.
Okay.
And I want to include in this, Gordon, with your permission, I want to include in this conversation information that I read yesterday. It's not war fighting. It's that the Chinese leadership has decided to solve their economic crisis with, you're going to be surprised by this, manufacturing. Okay, here it comes. And the way they're going to solve it is that they're going to make more of everything, sometimes called overcapacity.
So this is episode 500 of an unending series on
Netflix.
we're going to
subsidize everything with electricity cheap to no cost land. The municipalities are going to fight over the startups that are racing for the three treasured instances: solar panels, EVs, and wind. And some companies are going to be so daring they'll never actually make a profit, but be rewarded from jumping from municipality to municipality to get the breaks, to get the generosity of the local team. Aren't you shocked, Steve, to hear this?
Shocked. I've never heard this narrative before. It seems to just amazingly work every time.
There are now 150 startups in the Chinese market with the word robotics attached to them. Whether they're raising bananas or not, they're robotics.
They do know how to play the system. That is what every person in that system has been trained to do.
Yes, extremely skilled. So I will mention in the course of our conversation, I know I'm being lighthearted, but I couldn't help myself. Oh, there's a solution. Why didn't I think of that? Here we go, Steve. This is two segments for tonight, total of 19 minutes. We start in Taiwan. Correct, Gordon? We start in Taipei?
Sure.
5, 4. This is the making of the John Batchelor Show with Steve Yates. And have I got the buttons running? Yep. 2, 1. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang is with me, and we're looking at Taiwan and its vulnerability to the threats from the People's Republic of China over many years. However, there's always concern when the U.S. looks to be devoted to another part of the world, in this case, the Middle East, in addition to Europe, because of the ongoing Ukraine risks. There's always the concern that this could be a moment for Xi Jinping to follow a very famous movie from the 1960s. I don't know if it's still seen. Crazy Harry. Dirty Harry was Clint Eastwood, and there was a scene in it where Clint has a statement that he makes again and again to the bad guys. And he holds up a very large revolver, the biggest ever made, and he says something, I paraphrase, you know, in all the excitement, I can't tell whether I shot 5 times or 6 times. I don't know if there's anything left in this weapon or not, being as how it's the most, and then he goes on about the Colt 45 or whatever it is. It's like a cannon. And he goes, let's see. Well, maybe you're lucky. Do you feel lucky? And he points it at the head of the villain. That's what I feel is going on with Taiwan. Does Beijing feel lucky? Steve, I ask you a Clint Eastwood question from the 1970s.
Well, John, I love the scene. It is... evergreen quote, always appropriate to trot out any opportunity. In this instance, there's all this constant competition that we talk about at every opportunity. That if there's rationality prevailing in Beijing, they should be more cautious today than they were a month, 2 months, 6 months ago. The demonstration of American capabilities in Venezuela to Iran, demonstration of American capabilities going back around the moon, and the determination to win the space race and AI race, while incomplete projects, pretty big down payments have been made on staying ascendant in that regard. China made maybe a mistake in holding a card face up about vulnerabilities and dependencies on rare earths that has kicked charged up an effort to rebalance away from that dependency that will close a gap at some point in the not too distant future. And so all things totaled, Beijing ought to be a little bit cautious about these kinds of things. Plus the application of technology, a resurgent, self-aware Japan, all of these things ought to make the a move against Taiwan right now something that would not naturally be in the cards. But as is always the caveat, we cannot bank on our form of rationality. Xi Jinping was playing political footsie with the head of the Kuomintang KMT, Nationalist Party of Taiwan, Chinese Nationalist Party, the official name, and sort of suggesting that there's, once again, this groundswell in Taiwan that wants peace by acknowledging a 1992 consensus that existed in name only when the Ma administration wanted to say it was a thing some 10 years ago. So that's, I think, where we are. Taiwan's politics remain divided. The majority of the people remain confident about their future, but concerned about America's commitment and what China may do. The X factor is, how does Beijing really read this? And we'll get some indications as the president's visit to China gets closer if it stays on schedule for mid-May.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, you mentioned the Cheng Li Wan's visit to Beijing. She's the head of the KMT opposition party. How has her visit played in Taiwan itself?
Well, there's not an accurate representation across the dominant media in Taiwan that would reflect the will of the broad voter base of Taiwan. And so I think there's an overabundance of more KMT supporting spokespeople on the array of networks available to the Taiwan viewers. And owners of some of these networks have significant business ties to China that may or may not influence the editorial line. But even with that, overwhelmingly, people in Taiwan felt as though her reframing of this so-called 92 consensus as being a consensus against Taiwan independence sort of was seen as joining forces with Xi Jinping to triangulate against the ruling party in Taiwan, but really through that, triangulating against the will of a lot of the Taiwan people who don't register and vote for the DPP in Taiwan. So I don't think it reverberated well. She's trying to sell a notion that somehow this dialogue could lead to peace and wouldn't that peace be great? But it obviously comes at great strategic and political cost. And it comes down to, do you trust Beijing? And the vast majority of people in Taiwan, especially after Hong Kong, the answer for them is unequivocally no.
The puzzle. Xi Jinping, he continues to make it very clear his aggression towards Taiwan. The other day we had an opportunity to talk to America First Policy comment from Piero Tozzi. You know him very well. He has China portfolio at the America First Policy. And he went through the military commission easily because the chairs are empty, except for Xi Jinping and I think a apparatchik, an accountant. So the point here is, how do you go to war when you don't have a military staff? Is that a problem for Xi Jinping? Can he just pick out the successors and they'll snap to attention?
Well, it gets back to the same dilemma. If you are looking at a conventional approach to how our theory of the People's Republic of China would operate in a time of conflict, you would be looking for the movement of significant materiel. You'd be looking at sort of a strengthening of these institutions that would be required to have jointness and operational control in a time of conflict. But Xi Jinping operates differently. We don't know whether the objective is strangulation and forced compulsion, whether it's attack and destruction, whether it's to hit, pull back, and negotiate. there are a whole number of models that could be followed that don't require Xi Jinping to have a full array of people coordinated and ready to go. And I think that the dominant theory that a lot of watchers of the situation, which would have to confess that no one knows, but the dominant the view is that a form of blockade-like activity, at least for a period of time, to have an economic and political cost and fear spread in Taiwan is the tool that they think is most likely. And it's basically what Beijing has been auditioning for the better part of the last few years, ever since former Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan.
A quick follow-up. The blockade now underway in the Strait of Hormuz, especially aimed at those who depend upon Iranian oil, that would be the People's Republic of China, certainly demonstrates how vulnerable China is to blockade. You don't have to go all the way to the Middle East to do it. You could do it in the South China Sea. Do they have a counter for that?
Well, so it depends, again, on whether they're sensible about reading the returns on that particular investment. Iran tried to close off the strait. It did so by the threat of attack or some other kind of extracted penalty for anyone who tried to violate. And it was that threat that kept the strait closed. It wasn't that the Iranian Navy or military broadly was keeping it closed. And so if you look at that effort, the U.S. has essentially flipped that script by breaking the blockade with a blockade of its own, focused solely on Iran and Iranian ports. The United States has demonstrated maritime, air, and every other form of dominance so far in this conflict. It still leaves the open for pinprick attacks that could be media significant and political warfare significant, but not militarily and strategically significant so far. And it is crippling Iran's economy. So China could play this card, but China still remains very, very dependent on imported energy and export to the largest consumer market in the world, which is the United States. So they could try this, but they may not have dominant support among their population to withstand the economic and other consequences at home, because they certainly would not have the privileged access to our market. And while they might be able to control the strait around Taiwan, they would not be able to guarantee safe passage of the energy they depend upon.
Gordon, just a quick thought. Does Xi Jinping respond to the logic that Steve just laid out, or is he an ideological thinker saying we'll overcome all obstacles because we're righteous?
I wish I knew the answer to that question. As Steve correctly, and this is a really important point he makes, you know, Xi Jinping may operate according to a logic that we just don't understand. He may be reacting to incentives that we can't see. There are things that we can say that are rational, but we just don't know whether he sees the world in the same way. We just do not know.
You have a question for Steve.
Steve, what's the reaction in Taiwan to the war in Iran right now? Because Taipei is very dependent on getting stuff through the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, I've gotten similar vibes from Tokyo, Seoul, and Taipei. And so it's not necessarily unique to Taiwan. Our Northeast Asia allies and partners, who are very central to our high-tech ecosystem, have export-led economies, who are dependent on imported oil also and natural gas. They're in a long-term rebalancing of that, where they may be buying more from America over time. They may be investing in a glorious project in the great state of Alaska that would alleviate some of this over time with a lot of investment. But in the midterm, they're quite concerned about economic uncertainty. And so the anxiety is first and foremost, are there any indications of kind of a quick de-escalation and somewhat normalization of the situation in the Gulf? Does this hemming in of Iran free the sources that our allies depend upon, which are not Iran? They would be on Saudi, Qatar, UAE, more normalized suppliers. If those get back online and have safe passage, then this market spike is temporary and they will have endured just fine over time.
Steve Yates is a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. When we come back, the mainland has an answer for its economic downturn. You've heard it before. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchel with Gordon Chang, my colleague and co-host, and Steve Yates, our colleague, senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, has just returned from East Asia. And I lay before him a revelation from London reporting in these last days. Xi Jinping and the leadership in the Forbidden City have found an answer to the unfortunate downturn in the Chinese economy just when they wanted to maintain a strong opening move for the arrival of President Trump. The answer to their downturn is this. They're going to subsidize industries that concentrate in chips, EV, and wind. They're going to subsidize them through the municipalities. They're going to give away land and electricity. They're going to provide workers at much below wages, lots of them. And they're going to subsidize anybody who shows up who has the word robotics in their title, no matter who you are. No matter if you grow bananas, they'll subsidize you. Knowing some companies will never make a profit, will jump from your municipality to another one, chasing the generosity of the local team, because they're rewarded not on the basis of profit-making, but on the basis of how many factories have popped up in the last three quarters. Okay, there's the answer. Steve, are you shocked? They're going to manufacture their way out of what happened when they manufactured their way into the same hole.
Well, John, I think the shock for me is that there was a journalist who felt like this was actually news. As best I could tell, this has been the playbook for quite some time. So this is sort of rediscovering and re-reporting of the obvious, almost painfully obvious. And it, in fact, is the model that has put them in this dilemma where they assert that they have this big role, but you only have this role as the manufacturing hub of the world if you have the easy access to the other markets, and if you're able to sustain this model of vastly distorting the price of capital, vastly distorting the price of resources. And when I say distorting, basically using public funds to hide true costs and then dump the value back onto international partners. That has led to liquidity problems that Gordon could explain far better than I in terms of this long-term model, I think, being profoundly unsustainable. And I think that a lot of Chinese leaders actually know this. So this is just a problem that they know exists, but they find it too painful, scary, or impossible to change course.
So, Gordon, at the meeting of the Politburo, everybody says how beautiful the new gown is on the emperor, knowing that he has no clothes on at all. Is that correct?
I think that's correct, John, because this policy comes from Xi Jinping himself, and he is going to enforce discipline. As Steve just said, many Chinese officials and Chinese technocrats know that this is wrong, that it's created the problems that China now suffers from. But they don't have the political power to stop the supreme leader.
Yeah, we call it spending other people's money. And the same result, right? Gordon, we've learned that through 250 years. Do not spend other people's money extravagantly and you'll be okay.
Yes, and really what we have is China does have a lot of money. It does have resources, but it's really stretched thin because Xi Jinping's ambitions are enormous. He's the most ambitious aggressor in history, and just everybody needs money. So right now, China is at a point where it may not have as much cash as we think it does for this project in manufacturing.
You have a question for Steve.
Steve, while we're talking about manufacturing, let's look at Taiwan. How is the Taiwan economy doing now these days?
Well, I haven't been able to see if there's any early indicators of where things might have shifted since February 28th and the opening of operations in Iran. It would be pretty early to get really indicative data in terms of that change. And of course, that affects the price of energy, which is an underlying factor in every other cost of doing business. But otherwise, because the advanced semiconductor industry is so big, and so profitable and so strategically important for Taiwan, its economic performance data to date is actually kind of stunning. It's outperformed a lot of its neighbors and shows a pretty durable strength. So as long as this modern economy this is sort of like the new oil of the 21st century, as long as that continues to go, the tech dollar that holds up the GDP of Taiwan, hopefully can keep all boats floating through a period of market turbulence. But right now, the GDP and other figures are probably somewhat distorted upward in a positive direction by the strength of TSMC and related industries.
When I traveled to Taipei many years ago, I remember being told that Taipei was important to the mainland's development. This is under Hu Jintao, I believe, not the aggression of Xi Jinping at the time. Taiwan was important to the mainland because of its court system and its ability to raise capital, and that there were many Taiwanese firms who had growth on the mainland. That was then, 20 years ago. Is that now, or is that all ended?
No, Xi Jinping's era has fundamentally changed the balance sheet on that. It used to be that a supermajority of Taiwan's outbound investment would actually go to mainland China, not necessarily to sell to the vast market there that people have chased for the better part of a few centuries, but because it was a boomerang out of that market to serve big markets, consumer markets in the world. China profited from that, got huge employment boosts in that, got capital investment, infrastructure development, all the things that have, in fact, strengthened the mainland, but somehow the wisdom of how those benefits were flowing from Taiwan into China just didn't match with Xi Jinping. And they basically made it so now less than 10% of Taiwan's outbound investment goes to China to boomerang back to the rest of the world. And because of the politics and military harassment and otherwise, Taiwan's going direct to big economies and big partners of necessity. And so far, that's working for them.
So they've cut their foot off to save their toes. That's what they've done.
That is the genius of the Chinese Communist Party in a nutshell.
Gordon, I'm having good success this morning figuring China out. We've got about a minute left, Gordon.
So, Steve, President Trump is supposed to meet Xi Jinping on May 14th in Beijing. Do you think that meeting will happen?
I am on the fence on that, Gordon. I'd say it's at best a coin toss at the moment. The president was sending out a Truth Social post in the not too distant past, suggesting that his communications and relations with China are, of course, excellent in the way he tries to frame it. Says that the operations in Iran and this, particularly this blockade on the Strait of Hormuz, freeing up navigation is actually, he's doing it for China and the rest of the world.
30 seconds, Steve.
Setting the stage.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Steve. Did you finish your thought? Because I
I think that if she is looking at this, he is not actually in a great position to get seeming concessions from Trump in this upcoming visit. Now, we all know that there, if there's loose verbiage about Taiwan or some other issues, as can happen when presidents meet with Chinese leaders, then there's potential risk for the United States. But all things considered, global energy markets have been changed dramatically. The notion of a BRICS counter-alliance system has been degraded pretty significantly unless you're just wedded to that idea. And so I think that the president has tried to reset the negotiating table to favor doing business. And that is not what the Chinese leadership is used to with summits. It's usually theater and concessions to them. And we can't blame them for that. That's what has happened the better part of the last 50 years.
Steve Yates, Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Where are you?
I'm in Tampa, technically Clearwater, because if you go across the street from my apartment building, you leave North St. Petersburg and you enter Clearwater. But you can literally see my office building from my dwelling. And in the not too distant future, I'm going to be doing a project with iHeartMedia, and that is in a building that is also in this same triangle that's less than 1 mile circle around where I live, where I work, and where I play in media.
1 mile, Tom. And are the streets empty of the homeless?
Well, where I live, the road is a major commuting route. So if you're homeless, you do not want to be there. Otherwise, you're going to get bumped by something at some point. But in the St. Petersburg area, you don't see a ton of that. And because I am a fuddy-duddy, I don't go around downtown Tampa to just play around and hang out with the young people. And so I don't see whether there is more of that. I go there for a hockey game every once in a while. And so our Bolts are in the first round of the playoffs. We'll go to one game for that courtesy of my wife's corporate tickets. And but that's my dalliance in downtown where you would see more of that.
Yeah, I saw some photos the other day of men sleeping rough on the streets in St. Pete in early in the morning.
Downtown St. Pete, probably. Some things closer to the beach areas, possibly. You get around the airport and north of Tampa a bit more in those areas. But this is a really spread out suburban area around downtown Tampa proper. And so those challenges are also just as spread out.
I see. It surprised me, given things, the way things are going. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And welcome home.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Steve.
See you, Gordon.
Gordon, your final comment on the expectation of the summit?
I think it won't happen. And my sense is the war will be continuing then, and it would be politically dangerous for the president to go to Beijing. He definitely wants to go. He's dying to go. He's craving to go, but his political sense, I think, will prevent him from going.
It's difficult to imagine with the war fighting going on.
Yes. I mean, yeah. If Trump is triumphant by the 14th, he'll want to go and the Chinese won't want him there. But I think the war will be continuing, but will continue through then.
The opportunity for China is to sustain the war if they wish to, because those supplies flowing into Tehran, even if they're not enough to defend the Reich's chancellors, they're enough to make them believe that they're being sustained. And so would it be China's choice to continue the conflict in some low-level fashion just to disrupt?
No, I actually don't think so. My mind's changed on this. And the reason is that I think the Chinese are really worried about trade. They're worried about their economy. And so I think that they're starting to see the pieces in their interest. So they're working toward that. Just a guess, but looking at what they're saying and what they're doing, I think that they have decided that this is not something they want to continue.
Final thought. Russia would seem to be gaining from this conflict. It certainly is in cash flowing into their coffers. Is China okay with that, or do they want to mitigate it?
Oh, they would want China. They would want Russia to be supported. But remember, Ukraine has been taking out Russia's oil facilities. So Russia is not getting as much as it otherwise would because the Ukrainians are destroying ports and refineries.
I see the two allies, Beijing and Moscow, at odds about whether the sustaining the war is wise or not.
I agree. I think the Russians want it to continue. I think the Chinese would like to see it close soon.
That's why we pay them the big bucks to figure this stuff out, right, Gordon? So we can comment on it afterwards.
But I'm just guessing, John.
It's where we are. Don't you love the idea if you add robotics to the title of your startup, you get generosity from the municipalities?
This is something which we have seen in the past, as Steve has just said. So, yes, it's you put the right name, you have the right name, and you get money from some government, whether the central government or a locality.
I remember many years ago when you were first teaching me the Chinese stock market, it was a firm that suggested it was green. I can't remember exactly what it was. It had a forest or something like that.
Not a forest.
And it didn't have any trees. There was something odd about it.
It was a complete fraud.
And they bid it up very high, and we use this as an example. That was one of the early days when I recognized that China's economy was a Potemkin economy. Whatever they were bragging about wasn't what was happening elsewhere.
Yes, there's a lot of unsubstantiated claims, and now we're seeing that, for instance, with DeepSeek.
Well, I think that we should consider renaming this the robotic making of the John Batchelor Show, okay, just to get ready for the Chinese investors.
That's right. That's right. You can get central government subsidies. Just apply here.
Right. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, this is the making of the John Batchelor Show, and the Roman Orchestra is shuffling on stage knowing that if I don't hit the button, they'll get double overtime, so I'm going to hit it. Thank you very much, Gordon.
Thanks, John.
5, 4, 3. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the stage is yours.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.